Welcome to the Voices of Veritas podcast. I'm Candace Pritz, Community Relations at Veritas Christian Academy. Today, we have the opportunity to hear from Dr. Woods and Mr. Nick Phillips as they discuss the importance of logic within a Christian classical education. Let's tune in.
All right, so today we'll be talking about logic, not only the logic school at Veritas, but we'll also be discussing logic as an academic discipline, and logic more as a habit of the heart and of the mind, a habit that we want to be instilled into our students all the way from pre-K through the 12th grade. So while there's a different school, we have our logic school that makes up our 6th through our 8th grades here at Veritas, and different classical schools divide that different ways, but we roughly are divided about the same with many. We'll be discussing this, what is logic? So when I ask you, why do we even study logic at a classical Christian school, what do you say to that, Mr. Phillips?
If the most important thing, according to Plato, that makes a society good and just and wise is education, by extension, that has to begin with the individual. An individual is the basic component of a society. And if the purpose of classical education is to cultivate these wise and virtuous individuals who will be able to relate well in their relationships to God, to themselves, to their neighbor, to their country, to their family, then logic is an integral part of that. And it's the art of reasoning. Mm-hmm. And because it's the art of reasoning, it allows students to be able to know what questions they should be asking, mm-hmm. and to know which questions are worthy of being answered. It's a basic grounding for the other subjects. And it was never meant to be studied alone. It was never meant to be, and we do study it alone, but it is incorporated and woven throughout the fabric of a good liberal arts education. Logic takes its place in history, in math, in science, in theology. And so this art of reasoning is absolutely necessary, whatever subject you're studying.
I like how you said that it is the art of reasoning. And because sometimes people think, I think they mistakenly think that logic is this kind of dry, arid, formulaic way of thinking. And I guess for people who've studied symbolic logic, that may be what they're thinking of. But when we think about logic here at Veritas and in classical Christian schools, logic is part of the trivium, which means it is a language art. And so we are teaching the students to reason properly and reason correctly using words and using proper thought patterns and being able to be both defensively prepared for unsound arguments or faulty reasoning, but also, hopefully, the way we teach logic here, it will be beautifully connected with grammar and rhetoric, and it prepares our students to offer sound reasons for everything from why they should not pay a particular interest rate for an automobile to sound reasons related to the resurrection of Christ from the grave. So logic, I like how you said, it is an art, but it's also woven in with a number of our courses.
Absolutely. And I love how you described it as an art of language. C.S. Lewis in The Discarded Image, I think it's in The Discarded Image, he quotes some medieval scholars who summarized the trivium as grammar speaks, logic or dialectic teaches words, and rhetoric colors those words. Mm. And so logic enables us to know what the meaning of the terms we're using is, as you said, how to construct or understand an argument. And yeah, that can be everything from something as basic to understanding an interest rate to discussing theological issues. And at a classical Christian school, it is important to understand that logic and all of our subjects have to be grounded in piety, that we don't want to create, again, to go back to C.S. Lewis, Men without chests. We don't want to create students who understand syllogisms, understand logical fallacies, understand formal and material logic, but can only use it to tear down or build up that which is advantageous to themselves. We don't want men without chests. And so it has to be grounded in piety. It has to be grounded in what is my relationship to God? What is my relationship to my family, to my neighbor, mm-hmm. to my country, to society? And understanding those relationships and grounding those affections where they should be is fundamental to a classical Christian education, and it's fundamental to our starting place in logic. Chesterton, he talks about you can work logic with basilisks and dragons.
Right, right.
You can only find the truth with logic if you've already found the truth without it.
Yeah.
And so truth is a necessary instrument for the right way of using logic. Otherwise, you're going to end up in some pretty scary places. And so with that foundation in piety, we seek to wed logic to something that makes it beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great image, wedding logic with something that makes it beautiful. As you were talking, I was reminded that even Chesterton in one place warns that pure logical thinking can lead to insanity if you're not careful. And so we want to make certain that we also don't commit the error that's explored in the ancient play by Aristophanes. You remember the clouds.
Socrates.
He is the great logician. And according to it's a parody, but they were making fun of people that were using logic to become sophist. And so they were people who were apparently very wise because they knew how to construct these arguments. I remember there's a great scene in there where a dad has sent his son off to the thinkery, as one translation calls it. And the son comes back with all the logical arguments as to why the son should be in charge of the father.
Absolutely.
And the son tells the father, you know, you're wrong about this and you did this poorly. And here's what, if applying logic to the situation. If I remember correctly, I think the father whips him soundly, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I think that was the father's reaction to the abuse of logic that he had received at the thinkery. So I'm glad you're saying this. Years ago, I had somebody say, oh, so logic basically is critical thinking. What would you say to that? I mean, how is logic similar to but different from what happens in some K-12 schools called critical thinking and what happens in some college courses? How is logic similar to and different from that in your understanding?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't want to denigrate the idea of critical thinking. I think it's a noble attempt to incorporate grammar, logic, and rhetoric
mm-hmm.
into places where grammar, logic, and rhetoric have evaporated, where they've gone away, they've been replaced with something else. But it's definitely a watered down, less systematic way of thinking. Yeah, critical thinking, I would say, is more of a catch-all term for the method of logic and the method of rhetoric. Logic and rhetoric is rhetoric is constructing arguments, but logic would be this more systematic, reasoned way of thinking. While critical thinking has that aspect, it's not quite as organized. And it also, I don't think, and I mean, if you asked five educators who aren't classical educators, you might get six different opinions.
Yeah.
It seems to throw away a lot of the classical historical dialogue that we've been engaging in, this conversation that's been going on for 2,500 years. Plato and Aquinas and Augustine and Aristotle and even Confucius and people like that, a conflation of critical thinking and outright criticism and rejection of these things.
So it seems that critical thinking became that hybrid offspring of logic 100 or so years ago in the academy, when prior to that, most students, most grade levels would have been introduced to logic. And once that went the way of grammar and the way of rhetoric, the way of the trivium, once that drifted away from the public sector and public education, critical thinking, I like how you said it. I mean, it was kind of a noble attempt to bring back some of what was historically called logic.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And in a lot of ways, it just sort of incorporates this desire to debunk everything.
Oh, yeah.
This desire that the past is wrong because it's the past.
Right.
Or, and I'm not saying the past is right because it's the past either.
Right, right.
But
good logic would teach us.
Logic, surely, yeah. So, but logic doesn't seek to debunk everything it comes across. Logic seeks to test it as to whether it's true. And if it is, great. And if it's not,
yeah, and just as grammar and rhetoric follow certain rules, there are rules and there are principles, so does logic. Logic follows certain rules. These are not man-made rules. We didn't invent these. Many of these, the logical principles that have come down through classical Christian education are found all the way back in Aristotle. You know, Aristotle, his treatise, it's called the Organon, which means the tools. But virtually everything Aristotle said in the Organon, the tools, became the first handbook, if you would, for logic. Logic that deals with everyday language, the kind of language that we use in everyday conversation. And it helps us to better understand. It is not just about fallacy hunting or logic chopping. It is more a full human way of thinking and reasoning clearly.
Yeah, it's not a stick to beat out the fallacies. And I'm glad that you mentioned the Organon, because the Organon becomes the standard textbook for logic in the Western world, beginning in the 13th century and continuing through the 1800s. And this is something that Thomas Aquinas would have read. And so when Aquinas is setting up the scholastic method, perfecting the scholastic method, he uses logic as a tool for finding truth, not for supporting or denying a particular opinion, but for finding the root of truth. And so he engages this conversation by posing a question and then presenting arguments for and against it, and then using the tools of logic, reasoning out what he finds to be the most true.
I remember the first time reading some of Thomas Aquinas's application of logic, I was so impressed that he did something you rarely see people do today. He would come up with the very best arguments against what his premise was, what he was going to assert. And if the best arguments against him proved to be not only good arguments, but true arguments, he would change his view of things. And that is a love of truth and a pursuit of truth that I think is at the heart of logic when it's done well.
Absolutely. We hope that our students are, like Aquinas, humble enough to admit when they're wrong and to change what they believe based on
sound
reasoning. Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember.
And if that's grounded in piety, then that's okay.
Yes.
So, I mean, as long as we're starting with these right affections and right relationships, then it's going to lead us to truth.
I remember the first time I read that, found out that Thomas Aquinas, it was in a biography by Chesterton about Thomas Aquinas. And he said that Thomas Aquinas prayed every day for wisdom. So what would be in your mind a relationship between logic and wisdom?
So logic is an art, and it's an art in the classical medieval sense that you take knowledge and you have imitation. So an art is produced by knowledge and imitation of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're supposed to do, and so we teach the grammar of the subject. We do teach the logic terms. We do teach the syllogisms,
right,
that sort of thing.
The technical language.
Absolutely.
Associated with every discipline.
Certainly, certainly. And then you you have imitation. So, for example, a blacksmith would learn about the properties of metals and heat and what they do to create and shape different instruments and tools and things like that. And then they have to imitate. They have to imitate what they've seen. And so a logic student would have to learn the grammar of the subject of logic. They would have to learn the terms, the vocabulary, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then through reading great works, discussing great thinkers, that's their imitation. And from that produces the art. And according to Aquinas, an art has to be geared toward the production of something.
Right.
And so what are we producing? We're producing sound, reasoning, wise minds.
Ah, there you go.
And so so I would say logic is an art that hopefully, if its purpose is carried out correctly, will lead to wisdom.
Mm, yeah, that makes a great deal of sense. Let's do this. Let's kind of conclude with a we've made a case, I think, for logic, why it's present in a classical Christian school, and what we try to do with logic as both an academic discipline, but also as a way of thinking and a way of working through and reasoning. What would you say would be some dangers in teaching and learning logic? Some things that maybe you've heard over the years that are unfortunate abuses or byproducts of a misapplication of logic.
Yeah, absolutely. Just going back to a logic that's not grounded in piety would be my biggest concern.
Hmm.
That if we're not using truth and right relationship and right affection as our necessary foundation for logic, then we will have students who are able to argue well, students who are able to create well-reasoned thought and well-reasoned writing that is ugly and that is, wicked.
Yeah, the term clever devils mm-hmm. is a term I've heard people use before. The last thing we want to do at a classical Christian school is to cultivate smart savages or clever devils.
Absolutely. So,
what would you say, what might be, is there an anecdote to that possible poisonous tendency with logic? Because it is a powerful tool. I mean, it can be used to verbally beat down your opponent. It can be used to poke holes in all kinds of arguments. And I have seen some people that logic took hold of them, and unfortunately, they want to quibble. There's a logic term there. They want to quibble over almost every little detail in an argument. And we all know that that's a dead-end street to getting to truth.
Yeah, so the antidote, I would say, would be, again, grounding what we're doing in piety mm-hmm. as well. And piety requires that we be civil. And so part of being civil is not quibbling.
Yeah.
And part of being a good logic student is knowing which questions to ask and which, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, and which questions are worth answering. Quibbling about minor, inconsequential, unprovable details,
mm-hmm.
I don't think is what logic was ever meant to do.
No. And I think when we hear of abuses of that, but I don't think there are any real examples of that happening. Let's conclude with this. I would like to say one of my favorite tools that I have been given over the years of studying logic. Then I would like to ask you, what's one of your favorite tools? I can remember years ago, first looking through and studying logic and learning how, like grammar, similar to grammar and similar to rhetoric, it is careful attention to words. And I can remember learning the value of absolute language and the problems of absolute language. And so in my life, I try very hard now to be careful. You will rarely hear me say, everybody is always upset about that, or nobody cares about that. Because the danger with absolute language is all you need is one exception to disprove the assertion. And so it's helped me personally become more careful with the words that I choose. And when I'm describing a situation, I do try to be more precise because of logic. Is there something that you really have enjoyed or benefited from the study of logic over the years?
Oh my goodness. I mean, your mentioning of absolutes. And it's not to say that absolutes aren't necessary, but you're right.
They exist.
In dealing with human relationships, my goodness, to say that, you know, you never take the trash out.
Right. Or, right. All you need is one exception.
All you need is one exception.
Once.
And yeah, and it's uncivil, and it's damaging to relationships. And we can't allow logic to supersede grace. And logic in that case wouldn't supersede grace because, if you have one example of trash being taken out, then logically your statement's false.
So that also is a, logic can help us to better engage reality, the way
certainly
things really are. Mm-hmm. And you speak in absolute terms, always and never. And when people speak in those terms, they're misaligning what is what's real, what's really mm-hmm. real.
Yeah, and it's like the notion of replacing I think with I feel,
mm-hmm.
Which is really common today. And I fall into the trap a lot of just saying it without thinking about it. I feel this when in fact we should say I think this, or I believe this, mm-hmm. or it seems to be this. The truth may or may not be contingent on what we feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being careful and choosing our words carefully is of great importance. And I have to second that.
So I want to conclude with just the reaffirmation of the greatness of a classical Christ-centered education. By the way, Christ was called the Logos. We get our English word logic from that Greek word. And so Jesus is the very word, the very center of all things. And it is our hope and our prayer and our intention that Jesus is also the center of our study of grammar and rhetoric and logic here at Veritas.
My goodness. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Woods.
Yes.
Thanks to Dr. Woods and Mr. Phillips for sharing with us today. Veritas community, if you have something you would like to hear discussed on a future podcast, we encourage you to send it our way. Thanks again for tuning in, and we hope you have a marvelous day.